Welcome to an English episode of Die wundersame Fahrradwelt. To advertise a new study, Fiona Kolbinger and Jana Kiesenheimer, together with Philipp Gaukler, started.
Yeah, thanks, Johanna, for helping us out with advertising this study. So basically, in very brief words, what the study is about is we would like to find out why certain participants in long distance cycling develop certain symptoms and others do not. So basically, we have observed, or through talking to other participants of long distance cycling races or events, we have found out that some people develop things like water retention and swelling of certain body parts, or eyelid swelling. So other people noticed urine changes, and all this might be related to changes in kidney function. So we would like to find out how often does this actually occur, and who actually has these symptoms and who doesn't have these symptoms, and what differentiates the groups that have the symptoms and that don't have the symptoms.
Jana Kiesenheimer, you're new to this podcast. Everyone knows Fiona Kolbinger, of course. How did this study start?
I just listened to your podcast 2 weeks ago, and like I always do, and I heard of the problem Fiona told about you, and you were talking about edema in ultracycling. And I experienced it myself, and I had a lot of eyelid swelling in Three Peaks bike race, and 1 year ago when I traveled to Portugal by bike. And I was just curious. And then you talked about the need of a nephrologist. I don't know how to call it in English. a kidney specialist. And it reminded me of a friend of mine, and it's Philip, and Philip is a real good friend of me, and he's a specialist in this subject. And I told him about the podcast and about Fiona, and he's also cycling, so he was quite enthusiastic to hear about it. And just a couple of days later, we went cycling again together, Philip and me, and he told me, "Well, you won't believe what happened. I just got a call, and he connected with Fiona, and yeah, he told me that they want to do a study, but have no idea how to do a survey online, and maybe need some statistical help. And yeah, that's why I wanted to help them, and now we're a really good trio."
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I kind of got to know about this through Fiona. You sent me a WhatsApp as well and told me that Philip had contacted you. And I was like, the podcast has not been online for 1 week. And you already, like, you know, it's amazing. I'm just really happy.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, this is a speed that we are not used to at all in science. So usually science tends to be slower than this. But it was really cool because this is the original thought of science, right? You have a problem and you have made a weird observation or an observation that caught your interest. And then you have a question in mind, you have a hypothesis, and then you have three people who are enthusiastic about it and want to find an answer to it. So it's really cool.
As I understand, the first post about the study was online on the 27th, and we're recording 3 days later now, and you've already almost got 1,000 participants.
Yeah, surprised. But yeah, it's amazing. We are really not used to reach that many participants in such a short time.
No, I know. Usually when you do studies, you're like, can your friend tell all your friends to participate, to, you know, invite them for ice or do some sort of, I don't know. But in this case, everyone was so curious and so helpful. I mean, it takes 5 to 10 minutes. I've filled in the form as well. And yeah, and everyone's, I think, really curious about the results. So can we expect results soon? How long will the study go on for, Jana?
We will collect data till the end of the year, probably. So just keep on filling out our survey.
And from then on, do you have a plan how to proceed once you have all the data?
Yeah, I think it will probably take us maybe 2 or 3 weeks to have results then. But yeah, we will see. We will start by next year probably.
And Fiona, I remember you had the hypothesis for a cause of this, but you weren't sure if this could be the only cause of the water retention. Have people come up to you and put forward some more explanations?
Yeah, so basically there are two possible explanations that we have in mind or that our literature research revealed. So the first one is the one that I have been talking about on your podcast, which is exertional rhabdomyolysis, which basically means that through the intense exercise that people are doing on these long distance races, their muscle is releasing a lot of myoglobin into the bloodstream. And this is basically harming your kidney microtubules. And so this basically means that your kidney function will suffer from all the myoglobin that is released from your muscle. And that means that you will transiently have lesser kidney function, which may cause all these kidney related symptoms. So this is hypothesis number one. And hypothesis number two is something like exercise-induced hyponatremia, which means that your sodium levels decrease in your bloodstream through, for example, excessive sweating. And this means that you have basically electrolyte imbalances caused by, on the one hand, for example, too much drinking of liquids that don't contain electrolytes, and on the other hand, sweating a lot of electrolytes. And I guess these are both hypotheses that we won't be able to prove through this study, like this survey, because we don't have any blood analyses of our participants, for example. But we are asking, for example, what did people drink? How did they manage their electrolytes? Did they do anything to manage their electrolytes at all? So we are trying to get an idea of how alert people are and like what they are doing against it. But of course, like this is probably like in an ideal world, we would have blood and urine samples at multiple time points during a race like this, at the start and the finish, and we would weigh people, for example, at every checkpoint. But this survey is just like to get an initial idea of how prevalent these symptoms are. So basically, how many people do have symptoms at all, and what kind of symptoms do they have? And we are, of course, really, really thankful about all these answers that we have already received. So maybe this is a good time to say thank you to everyone who has already participated and helped us. So, yeah.
Yeah, as I said before, I'm really, surprised to see these high numbers of participants. And yeah, you got support from the Transcontinental Race, from Anna Heslock. She shared the study through the email list. I don't know how many people are on there, but I received the study also in my email inbox. And yeah, looking at the Transcontinental Race, how could a field study look like?
Well, so as I said, like the most important, I would say, like parameters that we would like to assess here would be blood parameters on the one hand, for example, electrolyte levels, and then also kidney function parameters such as creatinine levels. So this would be how we could objectively quantify the kidney function and like the development of the kidney function over time. But then also there are some means to observe symptoms. For example, we could check the body weight of participants. So maybe, for example, if people get water retention, their body weight may increase actually during the course of a bike race transiently. I mean, of course, most people will feel like they lose weight during such a long distance bike ride or bike race, but many people might have an increase in their body weight transiently. So we would like to take the body weight of people. We would like, one idea would also be to, for example, have an app for participants to give them the possibility to track their water intake, drink intake, and maybe they could take a photo through that app and send it to us, like to the study team, so that we could observe what people eat and if that may be related to the development of such symptoms. So there are many ways, but like regarding the parameters that we would like to have body-wise, that would be blood, probably at least at the start and at the finish, and urine at the start and at the finish. And then there are some things that you could additionally do, such as a sweat swap to kind of find out how salty people's sweat is. So there are differences. But yeah, as I said, like this survey that we are conducting now is the necessary preparation for this, because we need to know how abundant these symptoms are in our community. And then the second thing that our survey could be good for is actually to find numbers about the community in general. So we are asking for jobs, for example. So many people feel like there are lots of engineers in our community that does long distance cycling. And we can probably give some numbers after this survey. So say how many percent of our participants are working in engineering, how many are working in healthcare, and so on.
Jana, is this the part that you were most curious about as a social psychologist and researching in this area?
I often wondered before if ultra cyclists are masochists. would be one study I would find really interesting, but yeah, this is a whole lot another issue, so maybe we will have some time for this afterwards. But yeah, we won't really assess some psychological parameters in this study, I guess.
But it would be very interesting to find out. Are ultra cyclists masochists? Yeah. okay, but still there are, as Fiona stated, there is information that goes beyond just the physical and the testing of blood and urine samples. How, Jana, as you are an experienced ultra cyclist, as a participant of the Three Peaks bike race, how do you think could the practical side look like? Would there be teams at the checkpoints for testing, or have you thought about this?
Yeah, I mean, logistics will be quite difficult. Because we need a team, and you all know, or everybody who ever participated in an ultra race knows that we need a team who is there like 24/7, because participants can reach a checkpoint at any time. And yeah, it's really a lot of things to plan, and we need maybe many students and people helping us with that, because three persons won't be enough for sure. But yeah.
No, basically you need a team at every checkpoint if you want to test at every checkpoint, or at least at every point where you want, what you're planning to test. But yeah, so everyone who's listening now, you can already think about maybe helping out in this.
But this is like in the very distant, it's more in the distant future, I would say, because a study like this would require funding as well. And so I guess there are some organizational problems to tackle first before we talk about specific plans for a field study. Of course, like as Jana pointed out, it would require a lot of manpower, and I mean, it would be conceivable that people have something like a study car and a car that could drive along to from one checkpoint to another. That would be conceivable as well. But as I said, like it's going to take some preparation and funding and manpower, and
there will be a lot of obstacles to face.
So how does that usually work? What would be the next step? You would contact sponsors, or how does it work?
Yeah, so basically, like, for a study like this, the first thing is, like, at the point where you want to draw blood from people, you need consent from them to do this, because it's basically, so you need ethical approval for this study. You basically need an ethics committee. Usually these ethics committees are located at universities. So basically every university or research institution has an ethics committee, and then you write something like a report or your study plans to them, and they say this is ethically good, or we approve it from an ethics standpoint, or we don't do it, or we advise you to change things about your study plan to make it compliant with ethics standards. So this would be something that we would need to get ethics approval. And then for funding, I mean, basically there are sometimes funding sources. There are external funding sources, and then there are also intra-institutional funding sources. Sometimes we would need to probably like make a financial plan, how much money we would need for that. So we could, of course, finance it with sponsors, such as, I don't know, like a car company that would sponsor a car for 2 weeks for the duration of that study. Then, I mean, there would be some costs associated with the analysis of the parameters, such as, so we would need a lab that quantifies something like the creatinine levels in the blood samples of our participants. So there would be financial burdens associated to the like medical analyses. And then, of course, I mean, if Jana, Philip, and I would do the analysis in the end, like after all the data is gathered, that would take something from our time as well. So, I mean, at the moment we are doing this in our free time, like we are mostly communicating in the evenings and at night and on the weekends. So we are very productive. But if that would take something from our time, we would need to think if we would like to do that in our free time or if like, I don't know. For example, Jana has a lot of other projects going on as well. So if she can't work on these other projects, but analyzes stuff for this study, then we would need financing for Jana to do this. So just that as an example. So like lots of planning to do, ethics approval, and then of course we would need to talk to every participant beforehand and tell them what we are going to do, so get their informed consent to this study.
Sounds like quite a lot of work, and I think it's so cool that you're doing this, and we'll leave it here, and we're all going to wait for more information, maybe for the first results sometime in January, February, and I'm sure you guys can come back to this podcast and we'll do an update maybe, or if there's something in between, we can have a little update episode. This is the English part for now, and we've discussed beforehand that we would like to do a German conclusion. Fiona, would you be so kind and make a German Zusammenfassung für uns?
Ja, genau. Jetzt haben wir direkt den schönen Übergang ins Deutsche gefunden. Genau. Wir haben jetzt im Prinzip relativ kurz unsere Studie vorgestellt, über die einige von euch sicher auch schon über die sozialen Medien erfahren haben werden. Im Grunde genommen geht es darum, dass wir erfassen möchten, warum bestimmte Menschen Symptome entwickeln während langer Fahrradtouren, die mit der Nierenfunktion zu tun haben könnten, und andere Menschen, die auch an solchen Fahrradrennen teilnehmen oder langen Radtouren, das nicht tun. Und bei diesen Symptomen geht es im Speziellen beispielsweise um Wassereinlagerungen in bestimmten Körperteilen. Also manche Leute bekommen zum Beispiel angeschwollene Arme, Beine, Finger, bei manchen Leuten schwellen auch die Augenlider an, so dass man nur noch durch solche Schlitze guckt. Und wir möchten eben herausfinden, mit welchen Faktoren das assoziiert ist. Und aus dem Grund, wir haben da ja in deinem letzten Podcast oder in unserem letzten Podcast, den wir, Johanna, gemeinsam aufgenommen haben, darüber kurz gesprochen und Hypothesen formuliert, woran das liegen könnte. Und daraufhin hat sich Philipp Gaukler, ein angehender Nephrologe aus Innsbruck, bei mir gemeldet, der über Jana Kesenheimer, die jetzt auch hier bei uns im Podcast war, auf diese Fragestellung und auf dieses ganze Problem und damit darauf, dass wir uns damit schon beschäftigt haben, aufmerksam geworden ist. Und wir haben dann nochmal eine Literaturrecherche gestartet und herausgefunden, dass es dazu wirklich keine belastbaren Daten gibt bis jetzt zu der Entwicklung von Wassereinlagerungen bei langen Radtouren. Und dann ging das alles sehr, sehr schnell. Wir haben fix eine WhatsApp-Gruppe gegründet, wir drei, und haben dann in kürzester Zeit, also jetzt in diesen 2 Wochen, die seitdem vergangen sind, einen, ja, ich sag mal, relativ umfangreichen Fragebogen auf Englisch entwickelt. Das dauert so 5 bis 10 Minuten, den auszufüllen, der eben befragt, was für Symptome man entwickelt hat, in welcher Stärke und zu welchem Zeitpunkt in dieser Radtour oder während dieses Radrennens. Genau. Und dazu überprüfen wir eben auch noch oder fragen wir demografische Daten ab von unseren Studienteilnehmern oder Umfrageteilnehmern, sowas wie Alter, Geschlecht, ob man Begleitmedikamente nimmt, sowas wie Blutdruckmedikamente, ob man hormonelle Verhütungsmittel verwendet und so weiter. Also wir versuchen, so ein sehr umfangreiches Bild unserer Community auch zu bekommen. Fragen auch zum Beispiel nach dem Beruf, ob Leute in der Medizinbranche arbeiten, ob das Ingenieursberufe sind sozusagen, in denen man angestellt ist. Und das ermöglicht uns eben, dass wir zum einen das die Häufigkeit oder das Vorkommen, wir sagen in der Medizin die Prävalenz dieser Symptome erfassen können, und zum anderen, dass wir auch einmal Zahlen über unsere Community kriegen. Also es ist ganz oft, dass Leute sagen, oh, ich habe das Gefühl, das sind unheimlich viele Ingenieure in dieser Rad-Community, und wir werden hoffentlich genaue Zahlen dazu liefern können. Und genau, bis jetzt hatten wir in den ersten 3 Tagen dieser Umfrage fast 1000 Teilnehmer aus über 30 Ländern, und das ist wunderbar, und da sind wir schon sehr, sehr dankbar und sehr, sehr überrascht über diese Resonanz. Aber mehr ist immer besser bei solchen Umfragen, und deswegen wäre es klasse, wenn wir jetzt noch so einen kleinen Schneeballeffekt anstoßen könnten mit diesem Podcast und noch mehr Leute dazu bringen könnten, daran teilzunehmen.
Ich bin mir ziemlich sicher, dass wir das werden. Ich verlinke die Studie natürlich in der Beschreibung und bin selber schon mega gespannt auf die Ergebnisse. Jana und Fiona, vielen Dank, dass ihr da wart und wir das so spontan gemacht haben. Für mich ist das ja auch wie so ein kleines Podcast-Baby, das hier gerade zur Welt gekommen ist, da ihr euch ja über den Podcast irgendwie kennengelernt habt. Und ja, das ist schon irgendwie schön. Und noch viel schöner ist, dass diese Studie einfach so mega spannend ist, dass ich so gespannt bin auf die Ergebnisse. Ja, wir sprechen bestimmt noch mal. Und bis dahin wünsche ich euch eine ganz schöne Adventszeit und hoffe, euch bald wiederzusehen.
Danke, Johanna.
Ja, klar. Danke, Johanna.